Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Breakthrough the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I am the Director of Digital Services at Eastwick Communications, and every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. Today, on this lovely Bay Area day, where I think it's gotten a little bit cooler, thankfully, at least in my opinion, I have the pleasure of speaking with Avinash Kashyap, author of Web Analytics in 1 Hour a Day. And while we wait for Avinash to join us on the call, wanted to bring up some of the topics that led us to bring Avinash on. You may know he's one of the leading authorities on web analytics and describes them in a way, web analytics, in a way that is very easy to absorb, very easy to understand. And for lots of different kinds of businesses, I think they kind of underestimate or leave it to a different department or don't tend to be forward-looking in terms of what analytics mean, why they're important, and that sort of thing, which we all know, for those of us that, you know, kind of, you know, love this concept of web analytics, because it allows us to make data-based decisions, know that it's a very, very important part of the equation, that we can tell a lot, even in a company's strategy, from the kind of web analytics the kind of approach they're taking to web analytics. So a good example is, what is their conversion metric? Are they spending more time looking at, business leads that are potentially coming in, or are they looking just at email signups, but maybe not further than that? And also, you know, do they have several ways of actually being able to track analytics? And that's another thing that came up yesterday when we had our chat with Guy Kawasaki. He, interestingly, he's quoted on Avinash's blog in an inspiring way, but what struck me as interesting was that he said that I think he had 6 different analytics tools, including some name brands that we would all know, such as Quantcast, and server logs, of course, and he's still trying to figure out how and why analytics. Which analytics do you believe? Because obviously some of the pricier services that provide a lot more data points, such as Omniture, are different than Google Analytics. And there's a lot to be said for Google Analytics on the pros and the cons. But one of the things is Google Analytics really, are you making the most of it? Are you making sure that it is something that is trying to track a conversion, that you've actually added in some points of interest to your bottom line, to your business goals? So from that perspective, I think it's very, very important that, everybody have a sense of kind of where they sit in the analytics equation, and why that is important to them. Why for example, it would matter to someone in marketing. When they're looking at the funnel of messaging, why does that matter? Well, for one reason, obviously you want to be tracking any marketing communications, public relations effort towards the bottom line. And that bottom line should be reflected in hopefully in your analytics report. So as we wait for our guests to call in, those are some of the reasons that I think analytics are so important to the whole process of business, and in particular, really influence, because it should, what should happen is that, we're influenced by the numbers, and certainly we see businesses that go bust basically all the time because they're not making they're not making the, you know, revenue targets that they want to, or they're not seeing enough lead generation coming through. And certainly you're, again, from our perspective as a communications agency, we want to do all we can to make sure we are helping in that effort. And that's where I think, you know, kind of the unsung hero, you know, data comes into play. And it may not be the sexiest or most exciting part of our jobs, certainly. It's much more fun in a lot of ways to talk to somebody from, you know, a prestigious publication or someone on television. But it's clearly important in terms of the bottom line, in terms of business, and in terms of those decisions that ultimately must be made. So, again, as we wait for Avinash to join us, I invite folks that might have questions about analytics and want to talk about what it means to social media in particular to join us in the conversation. And I think we have Avinash on the line at the moment.
Hi, Jennifer. So sorry.
Hello. That's okay. We are thrilled to have you. I've been rambling on and on about why I think it's important that we talk about analytics. And, you know, I'll make sure that everybody, you know, has been reintroduced to you. So with us now is Avinash, and correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you say your last name, Kaushik.
Kaushik, yeah.
And he is the author of Web Analytics an Hour a Day. And I was just saying how one of the things I love about when you come in and do a talk or even on your blog, you make things really simple for people to understand. And so let's, you know, I want to welcome you to the program and thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me. No, I appreciate that.
People may not know that are regular listeners that we have a variety of folks on the program, but Avinash is kind of the rock star of the analytics world.
No.
He's a very humble man, but he really, really is very well regarded, and I would challenge you to send me a link to a conference where we're talking about websites and social media in a significant way, and he's not present or at least has been invited. So I thank you for spending the time with us, because I know time is money for all of us, and especially you must be in high demand these days, I would imagine.
No, I appreciate that. No, for me, it's fun to be in a podcast with so many wonderful people who get it and want to get to the next level. I'm happy to be a small part of that process.
Great. Well, let's start with somebody that, you know, that you actually quote on your blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that I was looking through your blog today, and if you go to the About section, we've linked to Avinash's blog from our own website. So if you go to blogs.eastwick.com, it's the first post there. But he actually talks about sort of the genesis and he talks about his career today and the genesis of it. And he talks about the spirit of the blog, and he talked about Guy Kawasaki, who was our guest yesterday, mm-hmm. and his early blog posts. And there are a couple quotes that I just want to repeat here. One is, "Eat like a bird and poop like an elephant," which is apparently a Japanese quote.
Yeah.
And "Think book, not diary," which I thought was kind of interesting. And I'll follow that up with a question that he actually left for you,
mm-hmm.
Which was, he has, you know, obviously on AllTop specifically, six different measurement tools, including QuantCast and others that we would know. And he's looking at server logs, and he's looking at different things, and he doesn't know how to synthesize the data. So basically it was, what data do you trust?
Uh-huh.
So let's start with kind of a high-level question. When you're looking at different multiple reports, what data do you trust?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think that one of the things is I espouse this strategy or mental model that I call Web Analytics 2.0, and it's sort of the next generation of thinking about what data is available online, what should I use, and one of the core tenets of that mental model. And you can find a diagram of it on webanalytics20.com. But it's just a little picture there, and what the picture suggests is we need to answer some fundamental questions about our website, right? And the questions are the what, the how much, the why, and the what else. Those are the four questions. And one of the challenges there, Jennifer, is that while that is the right mental model to think about things, you end up using multiple tools. And you have to execute a strategy called multiplicity, which it says that you have to now, unfortunately, in the world, pick the right tool to answer the right question. Right, there is a right tool for every question you want to answer. In the past, actually, for years and years and years, as we made decisions about our offline world and ERP and CRM systems, our mental model was, we're going to pick one tool and centralize all the data in that one tool, and that's going to give us all the answers. And the problem is, on the web, that doesn't work, because we have lots more data sources we need to end up using, so we have to execute the strategy multiplicity. Now, as you go about the process, the thing that I have to figure out is, what is the question I want to get answered? And once you figure out what the question is that you want to answer, there is one single right tool for it. So let me give you an example. One of the things Guy probably wants to track is how many people come to his website or how many page views are there, right? That's a very simple question. And this question you would answer using clickstream data from your website, all using web analytics tools. Now there are two primary ways of answering that question. One is to use log-based tools, and this is where Guy mentioned that he used server logs, right? Mm-hmm. That's one way to use it. Another source of data to make that decision is to use JavaScript tag-based tools. And these are tools like Google Analytics, Omniture, WebTrends, Core Metrics. These are the JavaScript-based web analytics tools. And an example of log-based tools are ClickTracks, OvStats, and things like that, right? Now, between those two things, it is pretty well settled that the best source of data for answering visits pages question actually is JavaScript-based tools. So if Guy is still analyzing server log files, I would hypothesize that he's not using the cleanest source of data. He can get a free or a paid tool using JavaScript-based that are JavaScript-based that would give him the best answer for the question he's looking for on page views, time on site, visits, bounce rate, exits, and these kinds of things. Now, but if Guy wanted to know, hey, how come most people who come to my website, they don't see more than a couple channels? I'm going to use channels. I think you call them magazine racks on Alltop.
He calls them magazine rats.
Yeah, I remember that. And if he wants to answer that question, like how come more, I wonder if people are getting everything they wanted, or what should the next feature be that I should build? Well, using a web analytics tool for that actually is a very poor choice. In that case, I recommend using something like the free 4Q survey. And what the survey is, it pops up when people leave your website, and it asks them these three questions. It's like, why did you come to our website? And please tell us that, primary purpose. Were you able to complete your task? Were you able to do what you were looking for? And if you were not, why not? And in that quote-unquote bitch fest, you know, that people tell you why they were not able to...
program, watch out.
Oh, sorry. But in that complaints, let's call them, or in that beautiful, valuable customer feedback...
Answers.
Exactly. There are sort of nuggets of insights that you would need to say, oh my goodness, you were not able to find this simple thing on my website. Oh, you were looking for this other thing that I didn't think that was important at all. And that is the way you'll find the answer to the question, what should I do next? Where should I focus my energies? Or if another question Guy might want to answer is, am I doing well compared to my competitors? Because there's so many competitors out there. In that case, the clickstream data is useless. The survey data is useless. The best answer to that question is to use tools like Compete and to use Insights for Search from Google, right? Those two tools will answer that question, and they will answer it very efficiently. You type in some URLs, you type in some keywords, and bam, in 2 seconds you'll know you've started to suck since December, right? And your competitor really has leapfrogged you in the last 3 months. What happened there? Now, the thing is, on your web analytics data on your site, you might be growing by 5%. What you don't know is your category was going by 900%. And that's the context that you get from outside. So the thing I want to encourage our listeners to do, to think about is, what is the question you want to get answered? And I think all questions fall into these four buckets that you can find on the website I mentioned. And then for each of that question, there is a right tool to use. There are many options, but there is a right tool to use. And by using that mental model, it's like a minor orgasm, right? You're so much fun to go find those answers very, very quickly and use data to make your decisions.
See, I knew that you would enliven the podcast, because when I talk about data-driven decision-making at work, I think people just go, what is she talking about? And so I want to pop it up a level, because obviously I work in the communications
mm-hmm.
field,
mm-hmm.
and we work with all kinds of clients, and recently I've been asking, as part of our growing effort to understand all of the things that our clients are trying to accomplish online and offline
mm-hmm.
for their web analytics reports. And a few
right.
things I want to know is, are they using web analytics? Because
yeah.
some of our startups don't necessarily do that. In that case, as the social media or director of digital services, need to make a quick recommendation about getting some analytics tools integrated quickly. And then if they are using tools, most are using across the board Google Analytics because it's free. Is it optimized, or are there conversion metrics that we can look at
mm-hmm.
that tell us something about their business goals that we're maybe not capturing in the conversations we're having with our client contacts, which are often in marketing or public relations pieces of the company
mm-hmm.
itself. So I know all that kind of stuff, and I'm telling the people I work with those kinds of things. But from your perspective, for communications professionals, I'm talking about PR
mm-hmm.
and marketing folks that are working with clients,
sure.
why should they care about web analytics? Just that basic question.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think here is a fundamental shift that has happened in marketing in the last few years. And I think that marketing thus far, let's say until a couple of years ago, marketing for the most part, as we did it on television, as we did it on radio, as we did it through our PR press releases, as we did it through the various channels we had, actually was essentially a faith-based initiative. It was based on a guy, I learned the term from President Bush, because that's how kind of he made a lot of his decisions, based on his faith. And I think, and the thing is, we had to do that and have it be faith-based or based on quote-unquote experts thinking, because there weren't many alternatives. It's kind of really hard to measure television. It's really hard to measure magazine ads, right? It's hard to measure these things. So we did a lot of faith-based initiative. But the amazing thing about the web has done is it has forced us to shift from being faith-based in our marketing efforts to being data-based marketing effort. And then the reason that shift has happened is both because consumers are increasingly being influenced by what happens on the web, but the other wonderful thing is that we can actually collect data for marketing efforts that we're doing, whether it's social media efforts, whether it's press releases, whether it's trying other influence channels, whether it's a Facebook page we create, whether it's a site we put up, a microsite we get. I mean, whatever we're trying to do, all of those efforts are measurable, which means that you have one of two choices now. You can be dumb and continue to be faith-based and not use data, which will put a lot of pressure on you to exit the business because you're not going to make money. Or you can choose to be data-driven, get on the program, and use data to make much more intelligent decisions, right? And then the difference is, Jennifer, you thinking you know everything about what is right, or you using actual data from your customers, from your competitors, from your website to say, I know how to execute, but as inputs into my decision-making, I'm going to use data. And I think that shift is the reason you need to care about analytics. It really isn't about tools. It really isn't about using Google Analytics. It's not about using Omniture or Compete. It's about this mental switch you need to make in your head that if you're going to continue to be faith-based, you're going to go out of business, if you want to tap into this growing trend of where marketing is going, you need to be a lot more data-driven. Let me give you a concrete example. I was in New York day before yesterday. One of the things that I was presented with was a trend line of how advertising spend is going to change in the next 5 years.
Okay.
And one of the most intriguing things I learned is advertising overall, all of advertising, okay, is actually going to stay flat or go down slightly from now through 2014. Now, the most intriguing thing about that study is, while that is happening, $50 billion of advertising will shift from offline to online. Now, that non-trivial sum is being shifted from the offline to the online channel simply because the online channel is so much more measurable. And by using their own dollars in spend, large companies and small companies are voting with their budgets to say, we're going to move to channels that are measurable and move away from channels that are not measurable, right? And of course, the online channel also happens to be a growing channel. So for people who are on our phone call today, for our friends and peers and loved ones, the thing that you want to answer yourself is, do I want to be in the business that is going negative $50 billion or positive $50 billion? And that's not a hard question to answer.
That's true. But for my colleagues who might be tasked with, and this can be a common scenario in our business where, potentially even a new executive that we're not that familiar with. So we're not sure if he's or she is on board with analytics. We're not sure kind of the factors that go – we don't have a lot of context.
Sure.
But we're told they love viral marketing campaigns. How do we connect the dots to making sure that that's measured? Because the one criticism about things like viral marketing campaigns online, which tend to be social media based, is that unless they happen on something like Facebook, which has very transparent analytics for its admins, it can be hard. It can seem like a challenge to track.
I agree.
What's the message there when you have these quick, and again, I think that you're right. These are potentially executives that have heard a success story from a peer that they trust, because the economy right now is such that folks will try things, but only if they've heard a success story about them. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be successful for them. So we're challenged with making sure we do the right measurement around that. So in a situation like that where it's create a viral video campaign,
right?
What are some of the things that we should be doing to try to measure that as we go?
Right. So let me answer in two parts your question, because one part, the one that you addressed very early in your question, is it's kind of hard to get executives who might not be as data driven. Now, these are very smart executives, and they have budget, and they want to do the right thing, right? But they just
don't know
the power that they can get from using data to be driven. And it's not because they're not very smart or anything. They're very smart, they have budget, everything, but they just don't know how to go about it. And that the answer to that question is, like, if you meet an executive like that, the thing that you should focus on, number one thing you should focus on, is not tell them, I can measure the number of visits from your campaign. You should not focus on how many page views you can get. The number one advice I tell people is start by telling that you can measure outcomes. So don't open your mouth and say, if we do this, I can tell you how many visits we got. No. Crime against humanity, right? What you want to do is you want to go to the executive and say, look, I can tell you by looking at our data at last month, we had these many donations, we got this much revenue, we got these many leads, we got these many people to embed our widget into their websites, we got these many X, these many Y, these many Zs, right? By focusing on outcomes, I think that you will get the attention of the executives. And we do that very rarely. We very rarely start the conversation by saying, I can tell you what is the impact on the bottom line for a nonprofit, for a B2B, for a viral company, for an e-commerce. It doesn't really matter, right? Start your talking by talking about outcomes. That's a great way to endear yourself to the executive, right? Because you are showing on day one you care about making money or saving costs, right? Both of those things. It's a
or
very, very
generating leads.
Exactly.
The examples can go on and on, but yeah,
that's exactly
it's
right.
Goal based at the outcomes, I think, kind of equals in our world what we consider kind of goal based.
Exactly.
Right?
And I had written a post a little while back where I call measuring macro and micro conversions, and I'll send you a link and you can put it somewhere if it's relevant to our listeners today.
Absolutely.
But it walks through six different businesses: a tech support website, a photo website like Flickr, a social website, and a non-e-commerce website. To say if these are the profiles of businesses that exist, then what would I measure as micro conversions? And perhaps that will spark some creativity for our listeners today. So that's the first.
There
are B2B. I did use an example of B2B. I recently wrote something about how I'd measure Texas Instruments website, which is purely B2B. And there are micro conversions that I can measure there that are.
Both of those, and I will add those to our blog. But I want to let you answer the second part of the question.
Exactly. The second part of the question is to say, okay, now the problem with social media, not a problem. I love social media, right? But the challenge with social media is
we're out of business if we don't like it.
I know, no. I love it. I love every one of my 10,000 followers on Twitter. but the challenge with social media is, in the past, the data we needed to make decisions existed all on one page, which is on the website. But now, as content consumption has gotten distributed, content is being consumed on YouTube and Vimeo and Facebook and Twitter, we've kind of lost control of where the data is. And then that's really the challenge of measurement. But that said, I believe that there are more options than we think that exist. So I'll give you a simple example, right? I wrote a post on Monday on barriers to effective web measurement, right? And it's a 3,000 word post. It's not a 300 word post. It's a very long post.
You wrote a white paper. That's a long format.
I guess. That's true, yeah. And then it was all about how do you get executives and organizations to buy into the power of measurement. So the thing I wanted to measure is the viralness of my blog post, right? That's my challenge. How do I measure that? Now, you know how I measure it? I have a plugin that I've installed that right on the post, on top of the comments, on the post before the comments start, that there's a plugin that shows me the number of times that blog post has been tweeted. And it is, this morning, I think it was 72. So the blog post has received 23 comments on the blog itself, and it has been tweeted 72 times. And it gives me a sense, my last blog post was tweeted just like 60 times. So it immediately tells me that I wrote something, and it has gone, and now remember, these are small numbers, okay? I'm not a big blogger like Guy Kawasaki. Still, it tells me, through measuring the number of tweets, that how much it has spread, how widely it has spread. And there are tools like Clout, for example, that help you understand if you tweet something. So I'm a big PR professional, very famous PR professional, and I have seeded my Twitter feed with like a little something, right? Hey, everybody, go check this thing out. And what it helps me measure is how many people have retweeted it, okay? It measures the number of retweets, and it measures the amount of followers of people who have retweeted my tweet. So it tells me, while I only have 10,000 followers, through the retweet process, quote-unquote, becoming viral on Twitter, I have actually reached 600,000 people. Now, that's that's an actual number, a real thing you can measure, right, as a signal that what you did was perceived to be of value and has spread to these many people. And the other similar measurement is I use on YouTube, for example, there are a bunch of my videos on YouTube, and I embed my video. And if you use a YouTube Insights link, it actually tells you how far and wide your video has spread and things like that. But even if you don't log into YouTube Insights, underneath the video, there is a link called Stats on any video you see on YouTube. And what it shows you are the websites, the number of websites on which that video has been embedded under the statistics and data, and how many times it has been played on those websites. So at the moment, I'm looking at one of my videos, and I can see the 9 websites on which it has been embedded, and collectively it has received around 8,500 plays on sites other than YouTube, right? And it's giving me a flavor for how much it has spread. number of websites and blogs that have embedded in it, and on each of those websites, how many times it has been played. Data, right? Actual,
right.
Real data. You can get this today. You don't have to aspire to it. It's there today. So
and it's free and integrated. So it's
just there.
One of the things about my role is, you know, not just, you know, trying to open minds to different ways. Part of the shift. So folks know that that I work with, they all know that the shift has happened between, you know, like you talked about before. One of the ways is in the spend that we're going to see from advertisers,
mm-hmm.
the way that people consume media online through the tools that we use that show us where activity is happening with, you know, related to a particular client, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I think that I, you know, want to talk about is strategy, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously that's something that I, you know, spend a lot of time on with clients in terms of social media strategies in particular. And
sure.
Sometimes it includes starting with, you know, the relaunch of a website and making best practice recommendations about what kind of tracking and SEO or even templates need to be, integrated or the foundation of the website so that we can track it and get the best SEO return, whether, you know, so not having to use a search engine marketing spend necessarily
mm-hmm.
for the site. So it can start there, or it can start with a very established company and that maybe even already has programs going. And I tend to always kind of come back, and I'm asking you this specifically because you're talking about getting metrics based on Twitter activity from a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
Is starting a strategy from the perspective of my content hub is really my blog, and then I push out through other channels
mm-hmm.
and then engage in two-way conversation based on how much people want to interact with me. Is that a model that you see being one of the best strategic ones from an analytics perspective?
I think it does make sense. I am a firm believer that the way we have traditionally influenced people using traditional PR activities, using television, using these other mediums,
mm-hmm.
I think that the mediums of influence are changing dramatically in the last year or so. I met the executive of the biggest luxury car company in the world, and I said to him that you've been I said, you've been fine so many years using those kinds of channels to influence people, but the problem for you is by the time your successor takes his job, he's going to be completely screwed if you don't today start engaging in social media, even to sell very high-end luxury cars, right, which you wouldn't think social media could benefit, but you do. And what I tell people almost always is, really, the thing that you want to do with social media is you want to be a part of the conversation. You don't want to do social media because of analytics. You don't want to do social media because you want to spam people. You don't want to social media because you want to continuously pitch. You want to be in the social media because you want to be a part of the conversation, even if you keep your mouth shut. Now, if you truly have the right mental model to have two-way conversations, then participate in conversations, right? Don't be a loser and just use your channel to send coupon codes, right? A, be a part of the conversation and then participate in the conversation. And that, to me, is the right social media, the right way to create a social media strategy, because most people say, I wonder how many more PCs I can sell. And that really is the loser way of doing it, right?
And you take a look at something like Dell Outlet, where they had the initial announcement that they had, you know, $20 million in sales from Twitter, and people started seeing that as a Twitter strategy, when in my opinion the strategy was really around the messaging, right? So
mm-hmm.
you have to message people and communicate with them differently, like you said. You have to use this two-way exchange. And
yeah.
I think that's part of using a blogging strategy, from my perspective, is that you can track outward, and that helps us get to a
yes.
point where we can start tracking ROI, we can start tracking these retweets, as you mentioned, and I want to know more about which tool you're using. So we'll have to have an offline conversation about that in particular, because I use particular tools, but it sounds like you're using something a little bit deeper. And we want to make sure we know what kind of splash every blog post, because we have lots of smart executives that are blogging. I mean, people actually are, I think, you know, amazed when I go to conferences and I raise my hand, you know, and they say, you know, CEO is never going to create a compelling blog. And I say, actually, that's not always true. We have a few, we have, you know, and maybe it's not every CEO, but we have some CEOs that actually, they care, they want, they get the two-way communication element, and, and they're writing really interesting stuff about very, very technical parts of their business, which they're doing, in a sense, out of faith, because some of them are startups and they don't have great measurements. So part of our job is, I think, as the communications landscape evolves, is to help them do that measurement. So there's kind of two parts. There's the one piece of the strategy, which is center that content around the blog, and then we can talk about what the content should be, how you communicate with consumers these days, what the tone should be. You know, CEO is not, you know, man on high anymore necessarily. Otherwise, they start saying things like Jack Welch did the other day and start upsetting people, you know, when he said that there's no work-life balance on a social media tool. And, you know, people felt like they couldn't really respond back to him. You know, and that was, you know, obviously hurtful to his personal brand, but, you know, not being at GE anymore, I'm not sure that it really affected any business property besides just him as a business.
I agree. No, I think that the strategy, as I think about it, is sort of in these three layers, right? The first layer is one that I think people often forget before approaching you, Jennifer, which is to say, do you actually deserve to be successful? Because most of the time we say, let's just jump into social media without thinking if we deserve to be successful. It is very hard to PR a pile of manure. It's really hard. I mean, you've got to have a product. You've got to have something that's worth talking about, something that's worth putting out there, something worth being part of the conversation.
Hopefully is driving buzz on its own.
Exactly. And then you can amplify. The wonderful thing you can do, Jennifer, and the efforts that your companies like you can do, is you can amplify that the conversation, can amplify what something that is deserving of success can be amplified through your very intelligent and strategic efforts. And the third piece is then you can measure it. I mean, that's the golden thing about it, is a lot of people say that these specific faith-based things can't be measured, or, oh my God, social media is like TV, it's really faith-based. It's not. You can measure it. So if you start with making sure you don't have a pile of manure, you've got something that is worth talking about, and then you create a social media strategy that is going to amplify your message, you should know that then you will be able to measure success. You can use hard data, you can use soft data to make sure that you cut Eastwick a very big check, right, or whoever the right person is.
Whoever deserves it, let's say. Well, you know, one thing I want to make sure that I get a chance to ask you about, we're a little over the halfway point here.
Sure.
And, you know, we're actually working, and this is specific to our company and hopefully is relevant to folks listening from all walks of life. But companies wanting to drive downloads, you know, specifically when we're talking about beta products. What are some tips for them being able to, you know, using analytics to find and drive the right audience to these beta products? So
As a caveat,
I want to make sure that you address whether tools like Radian6, eCarin, et cetera, are key to this, or whether it can be done without those tools.
So for the right company, there, I'm sure Radian6 is the right tool. The thing that I want to emphasize is you don't have to go and buy a tool necessarily to get the answers that you're looking for. And if this is your first day on the job, or this is, you know, you've not done this before, and don't feel compelled to have to pay a lot of money on day one to get the information you're looking for. That's the first thing I want to make sure. There are a number of wonderful tools. One of the most beautiful things about the social media space or the web space in general is there is this massive proliferation of free, very, very wonderful tools that you can use to get the answers you're looking for. In fact, in just even if I reflect back to 18 months ago, we were very, very poor in terms of the sources we needed to use. And so now there are a lot of sources. And the question I try to answer is, when I want to answer the right question and pick the right tool, what is the tool that has the largest source of data, good data, that I can use to answer my question? And for some of those answers, it could be tool X. Some of those answers, it could be tool Y. And the other day, somebody was championing a tool to be used to answer some fundamental questions. And this tool, total complete user base that they use to measure success, was 60,000 American people who have agreed to install spyware on their computers, and the spyware reports all their activity. And this company sells this data for a very large price for those 60,000 people, extrapolated it for 200 million Americans who surf the web. This tool is not installed in any business environment. It is prohibited by universities as spyware. So imagine the kind of people who are in this panel, who's been extrapolated and sold for 200 grand a year, and it's just crap. It's just crap because of the kind of data it collects. So I encourage people to think, not just get enamored by the screenshots of the reports, but just spend like 10, 15 minutes and ask the question of the vendor, how do you collect data? How many people are in your sample? Those two questions will help you pick the right tool, right? And there are a ton of them.
What are you indexing, and are you indexing this or that sort of thing? But getting back to sort of, I really want to make sure we get to this question of, can we use analytics to drive downloads, specifically the beta products?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe companies that aren't necessarily established or products that certainly aren't established. And how do you do it? Do you have an example?
So a good example of this is like the other day I met with a company that is relatively unknown. And one of the things that we wanted to say is, how should we do advertising in order to show up in front of the right kind of people? That was the goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so we used two different tools, actually three tools, to go attack that problem. And the idea was to locate the people who are a relevant audience for us, so we can show our advertising for a low cost in front of those people, or do the kind of SEO that is required to get in front of those people, so we can get a lot of traffic to our website. And then once they come to our website, we can convince them about our glory and greatness and get them to download, right? Maybe even just from the landing page. Download now. And so the first tool we used was a tool called Insights for Search. Just type Insights for Search into Google and you'll find it. And what the tool does is it allows you to report on organic search data across the World Wide Web for Google, and it helps you analyze the data either by category or keyword. So, for example, you can say my software is using Adobe Air, and it will stream on your desktop the news about the hottest celebrities on the internet right now and their quote-unquote interesting videos, right? Viral videos. So what you can do in this tool is you can go in and say, I want to know who are the hottest celebrities, or what are the states that where there is a lot of interest in celebrities in the entertainment business. So you pick the category entertainment, you pick celebrities, and you hit submit. And what it will tell you are in which states there is a lot of interest and what are the keywords being typed by people who are looking for these kinds of news. Or you can go in and say, my software, so for example, one of the software I love on my Windows desktop is called RocketDock. Have you used it? It's fantastic.
I know of it, yes.
Yeah, so I want to go and figure out how to increase downloads for RocketDock, which is a free tool. And then what I would go in and say is I would type in the keywords for software utilities. I would type in the keyword for alternatives to Windows Start Menu. I would type in for fast program access. I would type in all these keywords into the tool, and then I hit submit. What it would tell me is, what are the real terms, real keywords typed in by people who are looking for those kinds of things? And then we've suddenly found a cluster of keywords we can use to optimize our SEO campaigns. We found a cluster of keywords we can use to perhaps bid on using paid search, okay? The other thing BK have also done is what states in the United States or what countries in the world are interested in those kinds of utilities. So we can do marketing in those countries or those states or those cities, right? That's one way of approaching the problem. Another way of approaching the problem is I can say, I met with some executives from Hollywood studios recently, and they were trying to market a Seth Rogen movie. Not Seth Godin, so sorry. and what I use is a tool called the Ad Planner. And in the Ad Planner, you can go in and say, I'm interested, or let's say netbooks. This is another great one and perhaps more relevant for your audience. I want to target netbooks. And so what I would go, I did is in the Ad Planner, I said, I want the demographic that is 18 to 24 or younger, okay? Because I think young people are poor and they would be interested in netbooks, right?
I'm not
trying to be mean, you know, but you know, that's an interest that an audience is looking for cheap computing platforms. Then I can say I want only males because I might think they are more tech savvy, or I look for females who are tech savvy, and I want people who are whose psychographic profile is tech geeks, or people who are interested in comic books. Right? You can pick a psychographic profile. So I use age and gender, which is demographic data. I can use psychographic data, you know, Hollywood fans, tech geeks, comic book fans, DIYers, homemakers. I can pick any profile that I'm interested in. I pick tech geeks and comic book fans because I think that's the psychographic profile I want. And I hit submit, and bam, it gives me a list of websites that are visited by people who are in this audience that I'm interested in. And then it shows you where you can do display advertising or you can create affiliate relationships for those websites. So I can then say, I have a software to sell. The software solves this particular purpose. And now I know the list of websites that are highly correlated with the kinds of people that I'm trying to target. Or the other thing you can say, this is another query I ran, which I said, I'm actually only interested in knowing what websites are visited by people who have searched for netbook, netbook reviews, cheap netbooks, netbooks now, netbooks whatever, right? I type in a cluster of keywords, and that tells me what websites are visited by those people. So then you can create PR or marketing campaigns that are much more intelligent because you don't have to guess which websites are visited by that audience. The data will tell you that. So by using demographic or psychographic profiles or by using keyword behavior, you can actually go back and do a much better job of targeting your websites or campaigns that you're going to execute.
Interesting, because a lot of examples that you have deal with, I have a bit of a cold, as you've probably been able to tell by now. But you know, one of the things that we really look at is not, you know, especially with smaller companies, you know, you don't necessarily need to spend anything on advertising to drive beta downloads of
sure.
a brand new product, right? Even if there's a slight barrier in a cost in terms of it costing money.
Right.
So for these
tools, actually, the interesting thing is the list of sites, let's say, that you'll get out of the Ad Planner, you may decide that you're actually not going to do display advertising on those websites, but at least you know what are the websites that are most frequently visited by the audience we're interested in. And maybe you can strike some kind of a reciprocal link deal, right? Or maybe you can make them a part of your affiliate network. To say
that was what I was just going to say is
it's going to be very cheap for you, right?
And what's the engagement? So
exactly,
not necessarily a lot of our companies use affiliate networks.
Right.
Do you think that they're useful in this sense for B2B businesses?
Actually, I think that the remember with either by using Insights for Search or Ad Planner, the thing that I'm solving for is not, the question I'm not trying to answer first is, where should I spend my money on advertising? The question I'm trying to answer is, where are my audiences? Because most of the time, people don't do that first. Then they say, I'm going to part in an affiliate network because I think that kind of works. But you know what? If the affiliate network does not reach any of the sites that your audience exists in, well, you're screwed. I mean, you're wasting your money, right? Or you're even wasting your time, even if you do a free deal with them. You're wasting your time. So the first question to answer is, where are my audiences? By city, by geographic, by website, by all these kinds of things.
Actually, one of our products is an influence map that tells people where, you know, not necessarily more of the demographic information, though that's available, but I think that's more easily available, but more where they are online and then how we might do specific outreach to them. So say if forums make up the largest percentage, what is then either
that's exactly right.
strategy or tactic to get to that community so that they're aware of the product?
That's exactly right. And that's a perfect way of sort of a perfect example of what I was saying. First, find where your audience is at, and then explore your options of advertising, PR, or whatever, because it might turn out for a lot of websites, it turns out amazingly that you need to use affiliate marketing as a channel. And by the way, when used by targeted, when your efforts are driven by relevance, you know, like, oh, here's an audience that's relevant to me and I'm going to do affiliates, it can be spectacularly more successful than anything that you've done. I recently finished doing a campaign that was actually email-driven in partnership with another company where the audience was. The conversion rate was mind-blowing, and the conversion was a successful download of a beta. It was a product. You could download the full version, and it would be active for 30 days. And then it sort of would bug you. So it's, maybe you should call it bugware. But no, I don't mean bug as a flaw, but it's, you know, it would irritate you. But the interesting thing is, in that case, email worked out to be a best channel. In your example, Jennifer, reaching out to the forum became a great example, right? So the interesting thing is, once you do this research up front, the advertising options become more available. You should choose them, because it could be affiliate, it could be paid search, it could be free link exchanges, it could be participating in the forum and answering questions. That's a great marketing channel, right? Or building other kinds of relationships through social media. So find where your audience is, then find what the perfect advertising strategy is. And remember, per what we've talked about earlier today, we can measure it. We can measure the effectiveness of whatever we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's so, so key, and really can help us make sure that we're in line with the business goals of clients as communications professionals. But if you're on the other end, you can get better insight into how to communicate, okay, these are my goals and I want data-driven decisions in these areas or in all areas.
Yeah.
So that gets back to, and we only have a few minutes remaining, so in a couple minutes, can you tell us how a company, in this case, you know, I want to make sure we include B2B because that's a big portion of our business. How companies can get a better understanding of ROI on marketing efforts around social media and specifically?
Yeah, so some of the examples that I used before kind of tend to work. I met with one of the largest software companies in the world, and they have a Twitter channel, and they have 3,000 followers or so. And I said to them, look, one of the ways maybe you're measuring the and this is B2B business, by the way. I mean, it's 100% B2B. It is so deeply embedded in a PC or a Mac product that you and I would never have heard of it, right? So so that's like really B2B, right?
Right.
And I said to them, look, when you've started participating in Twitter, the thing is you shouldn't compare. I said, let me compare myself and you. And at the time, I don't know, I think I had like 7,000 followers, and they had like 3,000 or so. And I said, there is a tendency to compare the number of followers. And it's important to look at the growth of relevant followers, right? You really do want it to grow. But the reality is, those are not really a great indicator whether you're truly engaging in the Twitter channel, for example, right? I said, that's the way that I want you to compare your success in the social media channel in a B2B business or a B2C business is, I use a tool called Retweet Rank. And I say, let's figure out what is your retweet rank and my retweet rank. And it turns out their retweet rank was like 48,000 something or the other, like, you know, 48,000 something, something, something. And my retweet rank was like 600 something. And I said, the reason you should measure retweet rank is on that channel, it is an indicator that you're adding value. If you simply keep tweeting PR things, like the dumb PR, not the smart PR things, if you keep tweeting things people are not interested in, they won't retweet them. They won't pass it along beyond your network. And I very focus very hard on trying to understand what my followers react to, because I use Trim as well as a way to track how many people click on every link I share. And I have a good understanding of who my audience is, and that's why my retweet rank is so high. And I call it as a way of saying you drop a water in, you release a drop of water in a still water area, and you cause those ripples, right? Well, you want to measure for your Twitter strategies, are you causing those ripples? And measuring your retweet rank is a way to understand if those ripples are happening, or you send a drop of water down, nothing happens because nobody cares, because you're not doing anything of value. And so that's one way of measuring. I also use another tool called Retweetist. Mm. And what Retweetist helps me is the number of retweets per 1,000 followers. I love this metric, because then it doesn't matter how many followers you have or how many followers I have. I and Guy Kawasaki can be on the same board, even though he has like billions of followers and I have less than billions of followers. But the interesting thing is, it could be that Guy's billions of followers are irrelevant because everything he says, nobody cares about. No, that's not true. Okay, we both know that's not true. But the idea is, I and Guy can be measured using the same metric, regardless of how many followers we have. And the measurement is, are we engaging our audiences, providing something of value? So that's the kind of thing I want to encourage B2B businesses to think is, when we participate in these social channels, are we causing ripples? And you could measure it using tools like Retweetist or RetweetRank, or you can measure tools like Clout that give you Clout. This is a new tool. I've been beta testing it, and it gives you even more measures of the impact of your campaigns. The one thing I want to avoid, the one thing I seriously want to avoid, and sometimes it, can I say the word, like pisses me off, you know, upsets me, let's say upsets me greatly.
Well, you said it now, so there we go. We know it upsets you.
Is that a lot of B2B businesses think there are robots at the other end. It's like, oh, we're a B2B business, so there aren't human beings at the other end. The reality is, it's no different trying to influence a B2B channel than a B2C channel. There are actual, real, living, warm bodies at the other end of your Twitter channel, your YouTube channel, your viral marketing campaign. Anything you're doing, there's a warm body at the other end, and you are trying to connect to human beings. A great example of this is if you go to the Texas Instruments website, by the way, that's as B2B as it gets, you will notice that there is a series of videos, Life Without an Engineer. And they are hilarious. They are hilarious videos. They say, what if engineers had not invented remote controls? And they show this funny video of how life would be miserable without remote controls.
Life without a remote control.
or it talks about how what would your life be if laptops had not been invented? And they're very funny. And the thing is, even though their audience is hardcore B2B, they're connecting with human beings at the other end through these campaigns. They're funny. These videos have become viral. They can measure how many times they've been embedded, viewed, played, forwarded, passed on. They get comments and all kinds of things, right? So even in a B2B environment, they're appealing to human emotion and connectivity. And I think that most B2B people think that's not their job. Like, they're talking to robots, and robots need dry press releases. And I really don't think so.
Yeah, I actually, you know, we have a good example that I think will become a case study. I'm not sure, when we'll be able to make that public. But I think we're actually starting to see, working with them for nearly a year now, myself. With presenting them with ideas for social media, and even before I came aboard, there were people presenting them with ideas for social media, but really trying to hone in on what kind of tone, you know, what personality are you putting out there? What your company, whether it's your CEO's personality out there, which I think is a great advantage of Guy and his business projects, is he's this, you know, this aloha spirit kind of person. He's easy to engage with. But for other companies, you know, you may have a leader who is really good at finance, and that's what they're good at. So that maybe isn't where we should take the tone from. So we look at, you know, where and how do we find the people in the organization with the context that we have to get them to understand that we need to develop what the company tone is. Make sure it makes sense to the company.
I completely agree, and especially your example. I mean, this is the second time you've mentioned the CEO blogging example. I want to underscore, Jennifer, that's really a great strategy, especially for a small business. or a startup that's just getting going, or in a B2B environment where people don't expect it, right?
Remember,
they expect robots at the other end. When you put out a blog and you have a blogging strategy, it adds such a powerful thing to your brand identity. And you can when you share something of value with your audience, the problem is most people will say, oh, I want to blog. Maybe I'll talk about tech specs and things like that. One of the most effective, one of the most wonderful blogs I read is of a startup where the CEO is sharing what it means to be an entrepreneur. And the troubles
awesome.
That he faces, and he's giving real examples of how to negotiate with VCs, and the thing is, he's created this community around him, which without him wanting it, has extended the brand of the company. And
I need to stop you there because I'm almost out of time. I thank you so much. If you would consider it, I would love for you to come in and just do a Q&A session with our staff, just to for them to be able to ask you some basic question, if you would, and let me know if you're up for that.
Sure.
You know, in later discussions. And I want to thank you for being with us today and taking time out of your busy schedule. Thank those of you who have been listening to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Next week, our guest is Josh Hilliker. He's with Intel, and I think he'll have some really interesting insights for you on the B2B side of their business. I feel like they're kind of the unsung heroes of some really good examples. And that's 1 week from today at noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show and Eastwick in general at blogs.eastwick.com. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thank you.